This is Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly movie and television podcast with a new episode available each and every week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, we like to bring you interviews with filmmakers every chance we can to give an insight into what goes into getting their films and television shows made, as well as insight into the respective art itself. On the CBS TV series Scorpion, Elias Gabel stars as Walter O'Brien. He's this genius leader of a team of brilliant misfits who function as the country's last line of defense against high-tech threats. As Team Scorpion, these members of Homeland Security's think tank, they solve the nation's crises as well as they try to fit in with the rest of the civilized world. It's a really fun show. If you've never watched it, it's a lot of fun. It has a great cast, which includes Catherine McPhee and Robert Patrick. And Scorpion currently airs on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. For this episode, though, we are actually talking to the founder of Scorpion Computer Services and the executive producer and inspiration for the television show Scorpion, Walter O'Brien. That's right, we're talking to Walter O'Brien himself, the man behind the man, playing the man? I don't know, but he's the guy. Walter's led a pretty exciting life. You can find a lot of his information online. You can actually go to scorpioncomputerservices.com and find a lot of information that explains his history and what he has done in his career and life. And during our interview, we talk about quite a bit of it. He discusses his past as a hacker, how Scorpion Computer Services came to be, creating a television legacy that also functions as a recruiting tool. I didn't have any idea about that, but he explains that in detail. And he answers a few listener questions. And of course, where do you go from here? And before we start, if you want to hire Walter and his think tank, you can always head over to scorpioncomputerservices.com or concierge.com to find out more. But without further ado, I want to just get into the interview because I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I'll talk to you a little bit more on the back end. Here's my interview with the inspiration for CBS's Scorpion and also the executive producer, Walter O'Brien.
Hello there. It's Walter O'Brien.
How's it going, Walter?
Good. Just thought cruising into the holidays, everyone would kind of go quiet and go visit their family and everything else. But we've had a customer signing up every single day and kickoff meetings and stuff. So it's been busier than ever. I don't know what it is. Maybe everyone's getting retrospective for the new year. But everyone wants to kick off their new initiatives between now and January.
And your company's kind of broad, and we're going to talk specifically about the television show and what went into it and the other stuff that you're doing. But in terms of the company, can you explain a little bit what Scorpion Computer Services does?
Absolutely. So different things people usually like me to talk about, a little bit my bio, because I was born in Ireland and then at 13 hacked into NASA, and that's how the show opens. So people want to understand how the hell did that happen. And then Scorpion Computer Services started back then when I was 13. That's why it has kind of a dumb name, but that was an IT company doing solving technology problems, kind of like Geek Squad today with Best Buy. Mm-hmm. But back in 1988, it was the very first time people were using computers and printers and networks and everything. Everything needed fixing and help. I started being a contractor both for government and for Fortune 1000 companies in everything, including cybersecurity. And then over the last 10 years or so, the company evolved to what's called ConciergeUp.com.
Okay.
The easiest way to understand it is Scorpion Computer Services solves any technical problem. So from missile defense to our healthcare system to balancing our electric grid, any big, big systems that you don't want them to ever go wrong, ever go down, or ever get hacked because it costs millions of dollars per hour or people die if it screws up. Mm-hmm. So we work on things from the command and control system to the from the U.S. Navy to the ballistic missile defense system that would stop missiles coming from North Korea to the U.S. called Aegis. Mm-hmm. All that's been either published or WikiLeaked, that we work on that stuff. Now, the ConciergeUp business, which grew out of Scorpion, is we had customers who started calling us with problems that were not technical. One of them said their daughter had anorexia. Can we find food that's odorless and tasteless, but high in calories and fat? Or their mom has throat cancer. Can we find a way of removing the cancer without removing her jaw, which was the only option in the U.S. We had to find a clinic in Germany. Or they wrote a book, how do you game the New York Times bestseller system so you can get on the New York Times bestseller list? Or how do you get it endorsed by a celebrity? Mm-hmm. Things like that. And my first response, as expected, would be, I'm a computer guy. Why are you telling me? And their answer is, no, you're a bunch of really smart people with a good Rolodex. We trust you. Why don't you try and figure this stuff out? So our customers started asking us to solve problems that were not technical. And we actually found that we approached it the exact same way we would with software. Okay, what are your requirements? What are our risks? What's your budget? Let's lay it all out in a plan. Let's have a status meeting every week on it. Let's come up with hypotheses and try them out and prove they worked or didn't work. And we would just trot along kind of as engineers, but engineer a life problem instead of a system problem. Whether you're planning your wedding or your divorce, we'd approach it the same way. And we'd bring along things we learned from technology, like disaster recovery. What if it's your wedding and it rains? Single points of failure. What if the Rolls Royce that you're going to leave for your honeymoon in breaks down? Do you have a backup car? Things like that. And we started applying the things we learned in software to life. And it actually worked surprisingly well. People loved it. People were like, this is like hiring NASA to handle my own personal problems. And it all worked out. And we put a financial model around it where it actually made sense and was worth doing. Someone needs to find their biological parents and they're adopted. It cost them $300. So we started doing this stuff and it got cheaper and cheaper because we got faster and faster because we saw the same problems over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then we had a doctor on call who's a great doctor, a plastic surgeon who's a great plastic surgeon, a lawyer who we know is a great lawyer. So now we have all these people that you'd spend your life trying to find, and we have them all on speed dial. So it really became like Rent-A-Brain. Then you just call us, and anything you suck at, we'll take care of it. Because you'll always have some core competency that you're better at than we'll ever be.
Right.
But you might suck at everything else.
I got a list.
So why not let us have a shot at that? People got addicted to it. They started calling us every 3 days with a new problem. You know, my sister has a back tattoo. How does she remove it in the most healthy way possible? My father-in-law needs to go to a rehab center for alcoholism. Which one is the best value plus has the least likely of him having a relapse? That's, you know, within 50 miles of his zip code. And just figuring stuff like that out that you could probably figure out yourself, but you'll make a few mistakes and it'll take you a lot longer than it would take us. Concierge Up now does that for 44 billionaires, 5 royal families. We do thousands of requests every month and really change people's lives and help them with all kinds of issues, medical, legal, entrepreneurial, whatever. And we just approach them logically. So that's what the company really does now.
Springboarding off of that, I mean, that's already a very intriguing and I'm sure active work schedule. So what made you want to get into filmmaking or launch into filmmaking from that?
Oh, I didn't. So here's what happened. When I started doing the Concierge Up stuff, we got more requests than I had geniuses to fulfill it because they were coming in faster than our engineering projects would come in. Mm-hmm. So I needed to find more geniuses. Now, our minimum is an IQ of 150, which is about 1 in 10,000 people. So that's pretty hard to find, hard to staff up. So now I had a funded problem. I went to my people and said, how do I find more geniuses? And they researched it and they said, well, if you write a book, most of the millennials won't read it. If you make a movie, they'll forget your name within 6 months. But if you replaced CSI as the number one show on the air for the next 10 years, then the geniuses might come find you and the 12-year-olds in the world will grow up wanting to be scientists instead of wanting to be Kim Kardashian. Mm. And that just might save this country, who's 47th in math, against our next cyber war, which will be won by whoever's best at math. So I looked at it and went, okay, that makes sense. So how the hell do we make a TV show? So when we go into an area where we don't know anything about it, we do the logical thing, which is we hire people who do know about it. So as geeks, we took some of our favorite shows. So we took the producers of Transformers, Spider-Man, and Star Trek, mm-hmm. the director of Fast and the Furious, the writers of Sopranos, Prison Break, and Hostages, put them all in a room, told them the story, and said, let's make a TV show out of this. And that was 4 years ago. And we've now been the number one show or number two show in 188 countries, 26 million viewers, Nielsen ratings in the U.S., and probably about 1 billion globally per week. And we're in the fourth season. And every time the show airs, 105,000 people hit our real website because they see it says based on Walter O'Brien, based on true story. Mm-hmm. And then we get about 20 resumes in from geniuses, and then we hire them. So it all worked. It was a recruiting concept. It wasn't me trying to be an actor. I appeared in the pilot and that was it. And the director told me not to quit my day job.
So it's a marketing / recruiting effort and also makes a pretty kick-ass TV show.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know your age, but I grew up watching the A-Team, Knight Rider, Street Hawk, Airwolf, yep. If you remember any of those shows, MacGyver.
Absolutely.
And it was all a bunch of oddballs trying to save the world against all odds. And obviously that had an effect on me because that's what I did when I grew up. And now I've just completed the cycle by creating the next cyber MacGyver for the next generation.
So
there was a 4,000% increase in the number of kids studying forensics, biochemistry, and after CSI that had been on for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So give Scorpion another couple of years and see the increase in the number of kids studying cyber engineering and computer science. I'm already getting the fan letters from the fans going, what laptop do you use? What university did you go to? What degree did you get? So they can copy what I did.
We need more kids that do that anyway.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. It's one of the few family shows where the family can sit together and watch it. And every week, it's a lesson. The kids explain the technology to the parents, who go, no way. Mm-hmm. And then the parents explain the EQ lessons to the kids, the emotional intelligence. Because Carnegie Mellon says 85% of your success is your EQ, 15% your IQ. So if I didn't develop any EQ, I'd be screwed.
Is it pretty surreal seeing Elias play you on TV?
Oh, totally weird. I mean, initially, him and I spent a lot of time together. He used to roll his sleeves up like me. He would rub his forehead and his chin when he's thinking that. I mean, he copied what I did. And he asked me, you know, what am I like when I'm angry? What am I like when I'm happy? What am I like around smart people? What am I like around dumb people? And he just got inside my head. What was I like in school, et cetera, et cetera? So he could become me in a convincing way. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate compliment was when my mother watched the show, after 20 minutes, she started accepting him as me.
Oh, that's great.
So he's done an amazing job to play a very difficult role because you're trying to emotionally connect with the audience while you're playing a character that has no emotion.
Right. Was that important for you as well? You wanted somebody who emotionally connected? Did you see yourself as, you know, maybe that's something that you don't do as well, so you needed a character that did better? Is that why?
No, we need the ratings. And then my show cancels. You can't hurt the feelings I don't have.
That's great.
So everything is math to me. To me, you needed to connect with the audience so that the audience would keep watching the show so that we could keep inspiring kids and celebrating intelligence.
I respect that. How accurate and current are the threats that the Scorpion team faces week to week? I mean, are they ripped from the headlines sort of thing? Or is this anything you've actually worked on, just hyper-realized?
Oh, I can point you to some of the articles on this, but we give the stories to the writers. We've been in the writing room with them. At the beginning of every season, we declassify stories from Scorpion. So they're all based on true stories. All the people on the show are real friends of mine, inspired by real friends that I work with that still at the company. Even the enemies are based on real enemies of mine. Now, obviously, they Hollywoodize it, and they put in some gun chases and car chases and stuff and some romance. So, and when I look at the scripts, at least for the first season, it was about 70% real or based on reality and about 30% Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're four seasons later now, so they've gotten a lot more brave in their creativity and having fun with it and so on. So that mixture will change from episode to episode. But if you look at the press releases, the stuff we've done, whether it's from the Boston bombing or stopping terrorist attacks or war game planning in Afghanistan or whatever, or the equipment that we work on, you can match it up with the episodes of Scorpion.
Was that important to you to keep the information true so that people would be inspired?
Yeah, it was important because there's a few reasons. I mean, in the 80s, every hacker movie was some kid flying down a tunnel of ones and zeros while wearing sneakers. And that was everyone's idea of hacking. But, you know, people have come a long way since then. They've grown up with iPads in their crib. They're not going to buy that stuff anymore. They're not going to believe that that's hacking. People understand intuitively how technology works a lot better now. So the audience is more sophisticated and they expect a more sophisticated explanation of stuff. Mm-hmm. What we've seen is you get two kinds of people watching the show. You get the ones that are totally enthralled to go, yep, that's technically possible. You know, you can put out a fire using a guitar and a low bass speaker. And you can breathe underwater if your blood is oxygenated enough to replace the need for your lungs. And you get people who look at all that and go, that's either real or, you know, a year away from being real. That's very doable. And you get everyone else looking at it going, wow, this is total fantasy. There's no way this is real. But they're just not well read. Because if you take those same things and Google them, you can watch people putting out a fire on YouTube using a guitar. So these things exist. It's just whether you've heard of them or not is a different question. So I think we have audiences that just love it for the adventure and the romance and the characters. And we have people who love it because it's all feasible. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's 100% real. I'd say it's technically feasible.
Let me ask you a question in terms of hacking, because, you know, Hollywood obviously romanticizes it because I think everybody that's ever used a computer wishes they were that good with a keyboard. But in the real world, many of us have been victims of hacking to some degree. Is there a good kind of hacking? Is there a positive kind of hacking that actually benefits people in terms of maybe stopping threats, obviously, or is it primarily all negative like it feels in the real world?
No, it is very interesting psychologically, but yes, there's bad hackers called black hat hackers. There's good hackers called white hat hackers. There's gray hackers, which, as you can imagine, are black or white, depending on their mood that day. Mm-hmm. They could swing either way. They're basically people who have tools and skills, and they can use it for good or use it for evil. Now, one of the big businesses we've done for years is automated testing and quality assurance for big systems that deliver our drug distribution systems that run hospitals, systems that do our banking. Well, if you think about what is quality assurance, what is testing? It's trying to break those systems, trying to find out what we didn't think of, trying to find a back door, trying to get 1 + 1 to not equal 2. Well, if I do that and I find those bugs first and report them and get them fixed before customers' money is stolen, then I'm a good hacker. If I do it and don't tell anyone and exploit it, then I'm a bad hacker. The work I'm doing is the same. Mm-hmm. Now, some software has killed people. We've had friendly fire incidents on the military side. We've had plane crashes and other things have happened because software has gone wrong. High-speed train derailments, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's because nobody tested it fully or completely. So that's what happens when you don't have good hackers working on something. Then the customer is the first person to encounter the bug. And so it's a whole war between good and evil and what they do with the information. And it's, I've had a gray hat hacker who stole money from a corrupt politician and then wired the money to the orphanage for blind kids that politician was trying to tear down so he could get given money by the real estate developers. Now, is that a bad hacker or is that Robin Hood?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
You know, it's like, well, who's going to make the moral decision on that one? The legal decision is clear, but what about the moral decision? And there's a million other examples like that. So mm-hmm. It's not black and white, but it's an interesting group of people, and they do trust and learn from each other. So, you know, we have hackers at Scorpion. We use them for good stuff all the time to help people out. But they're very powerful people. And if they wanted to turn evil, they could. Nobody's going to stop them.
Do you feel that the next big war that we ever really have is just going to be a war of information? Nuclear warheads and everything else it's not really the big threat we should be most concerned with. It should be information.
I mean, information, yes, is critical and valuable and everything else, but it's not so much information as it is control. You know, if I went crazy to hack a foreign country with a whole team of hackers, then I could shut down their electric grid, cause their vehicles to crash, stop their traffic dead, cut off their sewer system so their toilets don't flush. With no power, you have no water pumps, so you have no fresh water coming up. So you could devastate an entire city within 2 days where, you know, people are in Mad Max stage, pounding the streets trying to look for food. And you could do all that with 12 guys in a room in a foreign continent. You just have to be the right 12 guys, and you have to be paid enough to do it,
right.
Which is another issue that when people hire cyber engineers and auditors and everything else, they're trying to hire the cheapest people they can hire instead of the most expensive people they can find, because not all people are equal when it comes to programming and technology. And sometimes the hackers are making $5 million a year, and the people trying to stop them getting in are making $50 grand a year as a junior engineer. Well, one of them is going to lose. So it's not just a war of information, it's a war of what that information does. Information runs everything.
Right.
Technology runs the world, software runs technology, and hackers run software.
It's a cycle. Getting back to the television show and your film work, you're an executive producer. What does that mean in terms of your direct involvement in the show?
Yeah, and an executive producer as a title can mean anything, but right. It meant I put the show together in terms of getting the right teams together, structuring everything, getting the funding, getting it legally put together, pulling all the right elements together to make it happen, hire all the right people and structure everything so they don't fight with each other and so on. There were several executive producers that came together as a collaboration to make this happen. then obviously the whole background of explaining who Scorpion's been for 30 years and mm-hmm. who the characters are and what the pranks are and what they're like and the psychology of what it's like to have a high IQ and a low EQ and how that the world reacts badly to that and so on and the funny parts of that and the sad parts of that and what that does to relationships with parents and everything else. So all of that background that, that gives you the Bible for the show is my life. That's where it all came from. Then when the show started getting up and running, the writers did a thing called, they'd write in the script. In certain areas, they put down AW. And AW meant Ask Walter. And it became a fun thing where we'd get on a phone call and they'd be like, okay, Walter, you're in a bar fight. How would you defend yourself? Okay, Walter, you're in jail. How would you escape? All right, you're in Vegas. How would you cheat? And they wanted to hear the kind of geeky, imaginative ways of getting out of those kind of situations. So instead of them having to go off and research and make up a story from scratch and try and find out all the right terminology, they just wrote down AW. We'll just ask Walter. We'll just do a phone call with him. And over time, then, that developed into them using Scorpion, the company, more, where they call up and go, do you have a nuclear engineer? And we're like, yeah, we do. Do you have a guy who's an expert on tornadoes so we can talk about our tornado expert? Do you know anyone at the Army Corps of Engineers who can tell us what it's like to drill a hole through sand when the sand is, you know, obviously collapsing mm-hmm. and to use the right terminology and tell us cool things about drilling holes that we can use in the episode? That was episode 10, Dominoes, from the first season. We either had those people or we could get them on the phone a day later and give all the right answers and have real stuff from real experts using real language about what goes on in that world. And again, that makes the show then more interesting because we're not just making stuff up for the public. We're actually educating them. Mm-hmm. So my executive producer is all of the above. It's all those things, whatever it takes to get it on the air, keep it on the air, keep it interesting, keep it real, keep everybody happy. We, you know, where are we going next? What about spinoffs and franchises and all that kind of planning? What about movies and things in the future? All of that stuff starts usually with the executive producers talking to each other, going, okay, what do you want to do next? They're kind of like the CEO of the company.
It's an important job. You mentioned movies, and that brings me to, you were a technical advisor on Spider-Man Homecoming and the upcoming Venom. So I've got two questions in regards to that. One, can you advise them to put Uncle Ben back into the next one? And two, what did you do for those movies? I mean, in terms of what does technical advisor mean?
So when I just spoke about the Ask Walter stuff, where mm-hmm. you could just call me up and ask me about any area of technology, that's where we formed Scorpion Studios, because the people we work with on these crews obviously work on other shows, other movies, other sets. And when they were over in the other shows, they're like, oh, I wish I could just ask Walter this. You know, what's a cool weapon? How can we make a robot move like a dinosaur? How can you have a character made of nanotechnology? And if they were, could they, you know, crawl a tall building or go through a keyhole? And what would that look like? And, you know, how could we develop a cool way of flying that people haven't seen before? That's not a jetpack and things like that. And they were like, I wish we could just ask Walter. So they started calling me. And I was like, okay, I guess we could just open up Scorpion Studios, and anyone who wants help on making their movie cooler and more realistic and better gadgets, better weapons, better locations, better costumes, just call us up. And we'll put all our heads together, since we know the bleeding edge of technology and military and black ops and what's going on in the real world. And we can bring that to bear with the writers and give them a smorgasbord of stuff. And including, you got to do research into where do these creatures come from and how old are they and what special powers do they have and what's their kryptonite. That's the kind of stuff we get asked to do. Now, I can't be specific, unfortunately, right, for Spider-Man or any of the other movies, because everything we do is under non-disclosure. What they asked us to research was to make their movies better in these areas, so we're not allowed to say what we did. Mm-hmm. But all of that comes under tech advisory services. That's why it's a pretty generic term. It's basically ask Walter what you want to know to make things cooler. Those are the only movies you're actually credited in. We've done it in a few other movies, but we didn't fight for getting credited in it. They just asked us to be behind the scenes and help out. You know, we're starting to get credited in this stuff now.
That's pretty cool.
And by the time you see something on the air like Homecoming or Venom, that means, you know, three, four years ago we were working on that.
Right.
It takes a while to get it all the way out. So there's stuff we're working on now that we can't talk about, but it'll eventually, hopefully, will pop up in the credits and talk about it afterwards.
I'm looking forward to it.
If I told people at the time, nobody would believe me, so I have to just wait till the credits come out.
I'll be there on day one. I've got three or four listener questions. I can be quick about them if you have the time.
Sure.
Okay. First one is from Yvette. What is your most memorable case and how have the cases impacted your life that you've worked on?
Ah, interesting. So we worked on a system that simulates, it's an artificial intelligence system called SenGen, which stands for Scenario Generator. It's the fastest AI engine in the world. It does 250 human years of thinking every 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's one of our best sellers. We have 155 inventions at Scorpion. And they use this to do mission planning in Afghanistan and kind of what they call playing war games. What if all the good guys attacked all the bad guys simultaneously using all different methods of attack and affecting each other? Then sort those results by the largest devastating loss of human life and then see how you could prevent that happening. And we did that. We did 59,000 war games in under 2 seconds on the system.
Wow.
And we demoed it at SOCOM in Muscatatec, which manages the Navy SEALs. And all this is documented in our press releases. But what we ended up doing was we predicted that if they put arsenic in the water supply to the base, then within 2 days, it would kill 400 people on that base because the arsenic would get into their systems. And they hadn't planned for that, so they had no way to defend against it. Now, the defense against it, once you've thought of it, is pretty straightforward. You have a separate water reservoir, and you have an arsenic detector valve that switches over if the arsenic level in the water gets too high. So we did that and put it in place and forgot all about it. Because it was a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later, we got the signal that that valve had switched over, because that's exactly what had happened. So 400 people would have died if the AI hadn't predicted that 3 months in advance. And I got to meet some of those guys and shake their hands, and they were very thankful to be still alive.
That's amazing.
I then was in Fort Wayne, and the soldiers came up on stage, cut their uniforms out with their badges on it, handed it to me and said, "You can't talk about what you've done. We've seen what you've done. Thanks for saving millions of lives." And they gave me their uniform with their badges on it and an award on stage. And that meant a lot to me, because a lot of the stuff we do is so behind the scenes. Nobody sees it. Nobody believes it. So it's nice to be recognized for it every now and then. And I got the humanitarian award this year for the youngest person in history to save the most lives from the ICON Awards. And that meant a lot to me as well, because that's the ultimate result of what all this does.
That's pretty fantastic. We've got, Paula. She says, what advice would you give others who are just finding out how special they are? And in turn, what advice would you give others who do not have abilities like yours to relate better to people who do?
Okay, two great questions. To the first part, don't worry about what everyone else thinks. It's that learning to not give a crap too much about what everyone else thinks of you. 99% of the people in the world make less than 34 grand a year. 99% of people in the U.S. make less than 430 grand a year. And it's not that it's all about money, but if you wanted to, in your self-actualization, help anyone, help a charity, build a shelter, help homeless people, cure cancer, whatever it is, it's going to cost you more than 430 grand a year. So if you look at that, it means 99% of all the people around you are giving you bad advice, because they already haven't achieved what you're trying to achieve before you die.
Mm-hmm.
So if you assume 99% of people all around you are wrong all the time and you don't care what they think, that's probably a healthy way to go through the world with your gift.
that's great. They
don't have the gift, and it's like me taking weight loss advice from someone bigger than me or taking financial advice from someone less than me. Unless they have a proven track record in what you're trying to achieve, why are you listening to them? That would be one perspective that's useful. And most of the people in the heroes you look up to in the world and people who make a big difference, like Elon Musk or anyone else or Steve Jobs, never gave a crap about what everyone else thought. And he was right about that, because none of them did what he did. The second one is how to deal with those people. Trying to understand where they're coming from, trying to see the world from in their shoes. An IQ above 120 is almost a disability rather than an ability, because it just kind of separates you from being able to relate to or understand other people or even read from them or understand if they're lying to you or make friends. You know, it's very isolating to be in that situation. So understanding that as a disability, even if it looks like a gift, is a good way to start, so that you have some empathy, because they don't have empathy, and being able to understand that they're not trying to be hurtful, they're not trying to be mean, they're just, they don't have the things that come naturally to you, they don't have them and see them. So you don't want to ask someone like that if you look fat in those jeans, because they might answer the question honestly, because they're not used to telling white lies just to keep the peace. And you might have learned that in the kindergarten, and they won't learn that till they're 30. And the more they get isolated and bullied because of it, the worse they get. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I'd say be understanding. Understand that they've got great value add in one area, and because of that, you have to compensate that they suck in a lot of other areas.
That's great.
And let them be. Don't try and turn them into you. They're never going to be the head cheerleader.
Sage advice. Ruthie, she wants to know, how closely does the show actually represent your life, and what do you actually think of the TV show as a viewer?
So we kind of covered that in what we talked about mm-hmm. 70% accurate, at least in the first few seasons, in terms of the show versus my life. And how do I think it represents me? It's actually a good exercise in me using my EQ to let go. Because if I geeked out on this and tried to make everything perfectly technically correct on the show, then it would be a documentary on Discovery Channel that nobody watches. The fact that I can let go and go, they're not laughing at me, they're laughing with me. Mm-hmm. Generally, people have empathy and respect the characters on the show. They're a dysfunctional family of superheroes who might save the world and then forget where they parked the car. And that's kind of what we're like in real life, absent-minded professor syndrome. So if they're lovable and you see them for the great things they do and you laugh along with them at the stupid things they do, that's probably about as real as it gets in terms of what it's really like in my life and around with the people I work with. And I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, I run a home for the mentally enabled, or an orphanage for smart people is how I look at my company. Hmm. They couldn't fit in anywhere else, but they fit in here and they do great things. So the fact that the show can be 70% accurate in its message, be lovable and reach a billion people a week, that's optimal. That's greater than anything I could do by interfering with it or trying to make it more accurate. It's much more fun that a fun message gets out to everyone than an accurate message gets out to a few.
All
right. So I'm trying not to ruin it by being an engineer myself.
Totally understandable. It's entertainment. You got to keep it entertaining.
Yeah, nobody's going to die if we have a bad episode. So.
Last listener question. Amanda, she wants to know, I'd like to know how being in such a spotlight for your intelligence has affected your life and the way that people treat you.
It's interesting. I mean, it's been good and bad. On one side, being famous for being a smart guy is a good thing. For the people who've reacted to it well, to the people who want to celebrate intelligence, people who want to get smarter themselves, people who are asking the serious questions you guys are asking, like, you know, what do you do with a prodigy or genius? Where do you take them? How do you bring them to school? How do you, you know, how can you be friends with those people? How can you integrate with them and understand their plight? And that's what I wanted it to all be about. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's a small number of intelligent people that behave that way. Other people will reject it, make fun of it, throw it out, say it's all bogus, can't be real, it's a marketing campaign, blah, 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 blah. I'm not real, you know, I'm not smart, et cetera, et cetera. And all I can answer to that is, you know, show me which channel their life story is on so I can watch it next Monday. and, you know, what have they achieved for the planet? What have they done recently? Because my track record for the last 30 years has always been in the top 1% of every industry and every field that I've done, both financially, academically, Olympic programmer, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure how I can pull all that off 30 years in advance if it's just marketing for a show that started 4 years ago.
Well said. Guess they handled that. What's next for you? Anything more in entertainment, or is it just back to the labs?
Well, most of our focus is on Concierge Up, where we're helping people with any funded problem. Mm-hmm. As we talked about, whether it's technical, entrepreneurial, legal, healthcare, whatever, using our brains to make their lives better. That's what we're all about. That's my main focus. On the movie side, Scorpion Studios is open for business. So we don't make the movies. We make them cooler and more realistic. So anyone who is making a movie, who is funded and has their budget in place, and they want to make the movie cooler and more gadgety and more clever, should talk to us and have us contribute to that. And anyone else wanting to change the world, start a business, create an invention, invest in a company, anything they're doing, we can make it better, safer, faster, cheaper. If they have a budget of over 10 grand and they're willing to talk to us and start trying us out. My folks average about 150 bucks an hour, so they're not unaffordable. and I don't charge for my time anymore, so you get me for free. And that's a pretty good deal.
That's a pretty great deal. And people can find you at scorpioncomputerservices.com if they want those services. They are available there. Anything else you want to tell people before we head out where they can find you?
Yeah, they can go to that site, or they can go to concierge.com, which will take them to the same place. It's just shorter. And simply just type in, there's a little box there where you can just type in even a one or two sentence on what you'd like help with and hit submit. And one of our high EQ super nannies will reach out and talk to you and talk you through how the whole process works. So, yeah, it's just talk to us. What have you got to lose?
That's great. Thanks so much for coming by, Walter. I know I got to let you go, and I appreciate you staying a little bit longer to answer some listener questions. That really meant a lot to them.
Those are great questions. No, thank you for having me and for taking an interest.
Absolutely. Best of luck with the show. Oh, by the way, I got to ask, because you did say it follows your life, the musical episode, do you sing in real life? Do you ever do a dancing number?
Yeah, I also said Hollywood's starting to have a little more fun with it recently, so that would be a great example of it. Yeah, there's no musicals going on here.
That's too bad. I was kind of hoping for a sing-out. Thank you so much for your time. I'll let you get back to solving the world's problems, and I do appreciate you coming by.
All right, take care. Thank you. Bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with Walter O'Brien, the real deal. I want to point out, he never answered my question about Spider-Man, so I'm hoping maybe he can tell them the next one needs more Uncle Ben. Regardless, it was a great interview. It was really interesting to talk to him and find out that, hey, my IQ is not so bad. I'm not at 150, but I'm closer than I thought I was. So I'm going to keep studying so I can join a think tank. Now, it was really interesting to hear the story of the man behind the man and hear it from his own mouth, and also address his detractors, because there's always those when you reach any level of success, and I'm glad he addresses it on his own terms. Really enjoy the show as well, so if you guys have never watched Scorpion, you should definitely check it out. It's a fun show. It's a lot of fun to watch. And again, if you want to hire Walter and his think tank, go to scorpioncomputerservices.com or concierge.com, and you can do just that. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of cinema when we can, and I hope you really enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has an episode every single week, and it's available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up this year. We've got a couple film festivals and some other fun stuff. So be sure to check it out. We definitely love film and television, and we try to have fun with it every single week. So if you've never checked it out, please come back. All right, that's going to do it. Once again, my name is Aaron Peterson. I am the host of The Hollywood Outsider, reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, buy popcorn. We'll be right back.